afternoon, and welcome to Ask an Atheist. I am Becky, and with me are Sam.
Hey.
And Mike.
Hey.
And Ask an Atheist, where we are indeed a radio show, but that didn't stop Jackie from the Midwest from emailing us at askanatheist.tv, giving us some feedback, where she claims that we are not a radio show, but a party and an organization. Mike, can you tell us what Jackie had to say to us?
Yes, Jackie said, "Since I didn't hear that your party took the Pioneer Valley Performing Arts Charter Public School in South Hadley, Massachusetts, to task for allowing their students to do a play based on the Bible, I assume that since the slant on the Bible, which the basis for the play, oh my God, was, in my opinion, tasteless, is why we didn't hear from your organization."
I'm sorry, Jackie, but I don't think that you ever said anything to us earlier, but go on, Mike.
I'd also recommend, Jackie, that you read this out loud before writing it. So you're bigots as well as an atheist. Plays based on the Bible are, in fact, plays based on the Bible. I suppose that's a...
Yes.
That's true.
X equals X, usually.
In fact, plays based on the Bible, no matter what the slant, you are atheist bigots and have no idea what fairness is, trying to take away Christians' liberties, and I'm sure if I sat here for a while, I could come up with more.
I'm sure she could.
Your so-called party is a joke. That's in scare quotes. The phrase, "do as I say and not as I do," applies to you. Maybe you should make that as your national slogan.
Wow, I would love to have a national slogan for Ask an Atheist.
Yeah.
Our little radio show in Clay Radio, 1180 in Tacoma, Washington.
Is this when we...
Ask an Atheist, nothing better happens on Sunday.
Are we declaring ourselves as a sovereign nation now?
I think so.
I don't know, but hey, do as I say, not what I do. Maybe Jackie's got some good input for our slogan.
Right.
Yes.
So first things first out of the gate, we are a radio show. We're not a cabbage. We're not a set of car keys, nor are we a party.
No.
Yeah.
This is clearly sent to someone else.
Yeah. That we've been getting a rash of those lately. People sending us. I guess you could say people we've interviewed.
And yes.
Is that what I'm sensing here?
Non-discerning people who don't see the difference between interviewing somebody and being that person.
Yeah.
I would have thought the two different voices would have differentiated that.
Different names, different voices. The fact we're on every week and those guys aren't. So. I guess I just have to come out and ask, what the heck is she talking about?
Well, you know, there is a backstory here. There is an actual story. The Pioneer Valley Performing Arts Charter Public School in South Hadley, Massachusetts. I'm actually kind of familiar with it because I went to school in Western Massachusetts, and I graduated in education. I had colleagues and classmates that student taught there and went on to teach there as professionals. It's a grade 7 through 12 public high school that uses performing arts as the lens through which to learn all of your secondary education stuff, all of your, you know, mathematics and your language arts and your history through the lens of performing arts. So it's a, you know, kind of neat, innovative type of education. As one might guess, there are theatrical performances that are held, you know, throughout the school year. And one of them happens to be the most fabulous story ever told.
Okay, so I can kind of sense what this is about.
So the most fabulous story ever told is not the greatest story ever told. It is a parody retelling of the Bible. It came out in the late 90s or so, and it was, you know, it got positive reviews in, you know, publications like the New York Times and whatnot.
Right.
It's provocative, no doubt. I mean, it features a female god and these characters, Adam and Steve and Jane and Mabel. Both of them are same-sex couples, and it sort of, the first act races through these parodies of Bible stories.
Okay, so if I can get the idea here, this is a play, a retelling of the Bible with gay folks in it, and it's a story about acceptance and whatnot
from
the late 90s.
Yes.
Okay.
The latter half takes them into the real life, and they wrestle with things such as HIV and adoption.
So there's clearly a hubbub about this. There's clearly a lot of people who are annoyed that this play is being done, I'm assuming.
Yeah, interestingly enough, most of the annoyance comes from the Midwest, from either individuals or specific organizations.
Yeah, hooray for the home team.
You know, this is performed in Northampton, Massachusetts, which is dubbed Lesbian Town by, I think, Advocate.
Yeah.
So very accepting sort of region that it's in.
Right. So, a lot of people are saying this is bad. I'm guessing the word blasphemous is being said somewhere.
They can't not say it,
right.
I think.
Yeah. So I guess it comes down to a major question. So if I can figure out what her point is from the reading and from reading it myself, and I'm really stretching here, she's mad at us for not liking when they make fun of Christians in schools. Is that what this is about?
It seems to be she's accusing us of being a hypocrite.
Okay.
I guess the National Atheist Party, who we had interviewed a while back,
yeah,
must have made some kind of public statement about how this is okay, yet they have a problem with like nativity scenes. I think that's the gist of what she's trying to say.
I think it's actually the absence of having said anything about it.
Okay. Well,
must mean our tacit endorsement.
Let's say something about it.
Okay. So I guess every organization is required to say something, yeah, about absolutely everything.
Well, when somebody scare quotes at us, we gotta, you know, I mean.
Oh, she scare quoted the hell out of that, yeah, email.
So I actually kind of, we were talking about this, and I'm not certain that this is a good thing. I'm thinking that maybe this is actually not a good thing for schools, because it sounds like it's a primarily, the message in which it's being delivered is primarily in a religious milieu, right?
Well, yeah, I think that it shouldn't matter what the play is. If it touches on religious themes, and when you take the religious themes out of it, the play doesn't make sense at all.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, if I was going to do a presentation of The Crucible, right, I can tell that exact same story and actually take religion out of a lot of the same points are there.
Yeah.
Same thing with Inherit the Wind. That these things are about free speech. They're about history. They're about oppressive, I guess you could say, what is it where you peer pressure, the, yeah, idea of conforming to a larger group and attacking people who are outside of it. That's the major point there. But with this one, it seems to be typically the Bible stories, but putting stuff in there that's kind of silly and stupid to basically poke fun at Christians.
And what if the, you know, the playwright and other producers of the play and the school themselves that said that this actually transcends religion and is using sort of a culturally relevant story in order to wrestle with such issues such as acceptance and sexuality and family and commitment and things like that.
Well, then they should just do Rent.
Yeah, exactly. I get it. I get what they're saying here. And everybody who's complaining about this, I'm guessing, is they're using the word blasphemous. They're sad that they're talking about gay people.
They're waving a Bible in the air.
They're waving a Bible in the air.
Everything that I've seen in terms of comment threads, in terms of press releases, it's all about how can you be so offensive to Christians. And if offense was the only thing on which we measured whether a school production could occur,
yeah,
I mean,
we wouldn't have school.
Yeah, because I mean, we wouldn't have theater programs.
We wouldn't have school at all if we were just measuring by offense.
Yes,
yeah,
certainly.
The bar is low for offense. I mean, a same-sex couple holding hands is a rule for offense, and
yeah,
that alone shouldn't be something that, like, oh, I'm offended, you take it out of your school. That's not enough.
So, I guess, as an educator, Becky, I mean, does this kind of thing happen a lot in schools? Do you see a lot of plays being put on in a religious milieu like this?
I don't see a lot in a religious milieu per se. I mean, there are certainly plays whose main storytelling vehicle is religion. You have Jesus Christ Superstar, which is a fantastic, huge theatrical, thing. And
I don't know about fantastic.
Sometimes roller skates are involved.
Okay. Yeah.
You have Charles Dickens' Christmas Carol that's performed.
You see, that's another one of those stories, though, that the fact that it takes place during Christmas is sort of is a side plot.
It's completely incidental.
Yeah, Christmas is the B story in A Christmas Carol.
A Christmas Carol is about a series of ghosts telling somebody not to be a jerk.
Yeah.
and honestly, I mean, when I was a high school student and my high school performed the Christmas Carol in December, the only thing that was really changed was explicitly there was, a piece where the little boy sings Noel, the first Noel, and
right,
they changed the lyrics to "Born is a child in Israel" as opposed to "Born is the king of Israel," and apparently then that makes
Born is some bloke in Pittsburgh.
Kind of like,
yeah,
that.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. I mean, there are all kinds of things that schools do in order to mitigate sort of an endorsement of a religious viewpoint.
We read the synopsis of this, and I know it was on The Friendly Atheist, and it's a story in a religious milieu with a religious point. It's a story about religion. So my question isn't is it offensive? My question isn't is it blasphemous? My question isn't is it acceptance? It's a story with a religious point. It's a religious message in a religious milieu. Is that not basically a school making a religious message.
So it's a message of the, your concern is that it's the school saying that the reading, the literal reading of the Bible is unacceptable, you know, as is.
Well, it's making a religious point.
Yeah. Is this, who cares about all that blasphemy junk? Is this an Establishment Clause problem?
I think it kind of is. Okay. I'm not somebody who has a problem with somebody writing a play that makes fun of Christianity. Mm-hmm. Because I make fun of Christianity all the time.
Really? I didn't know that.
I don't do it on the payroll of the state when I do it. We're not getting money right now from the National Endowment of the Arts to make fun of Christianity. We do this for free.
I wouldn't say no, but...
I wouldn't say no to the money, but if it was somebody else, I'd go,
yeah.
And everything changes when you're the one getting money. But I would say that it does. I don't want a school making a religious point of any kind.
Right.
I think that secularism implies neutrality, and that means neutrality even towards people who are privileged.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm fine making fun of Christianity. I just don't think that the school should take a stance as a agent of the state in making fun of Christianity.
Now, the messages that they're trying to transmit here, the message of acceptance, the message of, you know, the message of diversity and stuff like that, I have no problem with that at all.
Me too.
You know, like you said, do Rent. Rent is another example of that.
It deals with young couples living in New York City, dealing with issues of HIV.
I was about to suggest Avenue Q, but probably not Avenue Q.
No, I think that would be equally provocative.
Yeah. So,
With puppets. What about, though, the Laramie Project? There's lots of high schools that will perform that, and that specifically calls into question a historical event and the religious viewpoints and motivations towards the killing of a young gay man.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's not parody, but it also has a message about it saying, hey, if you base your motivations on killing a young gay man based on your religion, that's fouled up. Like, that's not cool.
Right. And like I said, this is a religious message from a religious concept. We're not talking about, you know, a creationism versus evolution thing. Evolution is a fact. It's an established scientific theory which needs to be taught in the schools. This is a religious message in a religious context. So I guess this is a situation where stop jerks are right twice a day type thing. I mean, they're making all these complaints, but they're not... They're wrong complaints, but about something that might actually be wrong.
The objection I agree with, but the reason, every motivation that they give for that objection, this is offensive to Christians, you know what? Who cares?
Yeah.
In that case, Les Mis would be offensive because it mentions prostitution.
Yeah.
Anything that has positive portrayals of gay characters, I would have no problem with school doing that. I just think that it's impossible to disengage the religious content and the fact that it's making a religious point about a religion. From the fact that it's a school and it's a public school. I do have an issue with that. I don't have an issue with being able to make these exact same points in a different play.
Yeah. So I guess there we are.
You know, in terms of that, I think I'm a little bit more forgiving. I would like to see the questions wrestled with, as you know, and especially if there's a follow up or a preview where you have a sort of sit and talk with the director, things like that.
Yeah.
And at this point, I'm not sure. 5 years after the fact, I'm not familiar with the curriculum and how they deal with it and how they adapt this play. But this could be this could be used as vehicles in their language arts and humanities classes. You know, points of discussion, things like that. So
I'm undecided. I honestly can see, because so much of life, so much of human history has religion in it, that you're going to touch on religion at some point in school. You're going to have to talk about religion. You're going to have to make people think about religion. I respect that. I understand that. I see the need for it. I'm not certain that this goes too far, but I feel like it kind of does.
There's a part of me that on one level, I read the synopsis of this play, and it seems like the same kind of really bad, pretentious, stupid liberal arts thing that just has a good message overtakes the fact that it's actually not very good.
Right.
And I've been waist deep in hippie garbage for a number of years. So I can see the shark fin and imagine what's underneath the surface of the water. It doesn't sound like it's very good, and I'd much rather, if we're going to fight this battle, can we fight it over with material that's actually good and defensible?
Not having seen it, like I said, not having seen it, it could be awesome. I mean, the shark fin might be a battleship, I don't know.
It just seems like the usual, and I know I use this analogy a lot, but the same, you know, one-woman show about a lactating lesbian dolphin stuff, you know, and it's just like, you know, that's wonderful and all, but
well, there
not
is a wheelchair-bound lesbian rabbi from a cable access network featured in this play, but all I don't know about the dolphin thing.
Let's, Wow. Okay. On another note, PZ Myers.
Yes, tell us about PZ.
PZ Myers is going to be in town this Wednesday at 7 o'clock at the Nordic Heritage Museum at 3014 Northwest 67th Street up in Seattle. It's being put on by Seattle Atheists, and he's, I don't know what he's going to be talking about, but he's going to be there. PZ Myers, be taking questions, be talking to the group. It should be a good time.
Yep, and for more information, you can go to seattleatheist.org, also listed on meetup.com for Seattle Atheists and Agnostics and Humanists of Washington.
And we also have another announcement, more Ask an Atheist oriented. June 21st, we're going to have our next fundraiser, and this time it is live music at Luigi's Pizza in Fife, Washington. It's June 21st. Should be a great time. Great pizza. It's one of the best venues in the area for music, as far as I can tell. It's
one of the coolest things. Luigi's is an all ages venue,
and it's all ages awesome. Event. The acts we can tell you about right now are Animals in Cars and Body Box, who we've mentioned on the show before, which is Nick Kennedy's band. He's a host on the show, and he's in the other room right now, ready to take your call at 253-584-1480. See what I did there? But absolutely, June 21st, $15 at the door. Tickets will be available at Brown Paper Tickets starting this week. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. When we come back, we are going to talk about the Humanist Chaplaincy Program at Stanford with somebody who's been through the program at Harvard. Should be a really fun conversation.
Atheism TV. News, events, community, entertainment, debates, conferences. A massive repository of over 3,000 recent and fascinating atheist videos from all over the internet. Or watch The Infidel, our own regular news show. Visit the shopping area and buy something for that special atheist in your life. Or rent captivating shows, movies, and documentaries directly in your browser. Atheism TV, the world's best source of atheist videos. Visit atheismtv.com.
Come to the 2013 NFA Conference. The 2013 Northwest Freethought Alliance Conference will be held at Portland State University April 5th through April 7th. Principal speakers include Dr. Daryl Ray, author of Sex and God, How Religion Destroys Sexuality, Hemet Mehta of The Friendly Atheist, and Dr. Valerie Tirico, author of Trusting Doubt. Go to nwfreethought.org to register and learn more. Again, that's nwfreethought.org.
So what does everybody want to play?
Something new?
Something with guns. Lots of guns.
Something that supports playing other than combat, you knob.
Jerk face.
All right, how about Dead Stars from Dame and I Publishing? It's a sci-fi game that uses the Universal Decay rules, a variation on our usual fantasy campaign system. This system has an emphasis on social and technical skills, yet allows technical characters to make thousands of different weapons.
Hey, psionics.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna be a bug with big freaking guns.
Shape-shifting tech head for me.
Check out DameandI.net for the sci-fi horror game Dead Stars, as well as a listing of other products and to get involved in the community forums.
So, picking you up at 8 tonight?
Sure.
How do I get to your place again?
Get off the freeway, turn left at the burger joint, past the Humanist Center, right at the...
What? Humanist Center?
Yeah, you know, the place where freethinkers have their meetings, hold events, access the resource library, drop their kids off for daycare.
This could be you and your friends in the near future. Contribute to the Humanists of Washington Humanist Center Fund to establish a physical home for freethinkers in the Puget Sound. Go to humanistsofwashington.org and contribute today. That's humanistsofwashington.org.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. And I was being excoriated in the break about the, I said, Humanist Chaplaincy Program. John Figdor is just the Humanist Chaplain at Stanford, right? Is
that I would say not just the okay. Humanist Chaplain, but yes.
I can't win today, can I?
It's all right, Sam. But yeah, welcome back with me, Becky, and Sam, and Mike. And on the line, we've got John Figdor. He's the Humanist Chaplain at the Humanist Community of Stanford, which is a chapter of the American Humanist Association. He previously served as the Assistant Humanist Chaplain at Harvard, where he received his graduate degree from Harvard Divinity School. And he joins us today from Palo Alto, California. Welcome, John.
Hey, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
Doing great. Sorry I'm a jerk.
I have some slightly worse news, which is that there's yet another correction.
Oh, dear.
Oh,
this might be my correction.
I'm not, it's honestly, it's a quirk about Stanford. So at Stanford, there are technically only three chaplains, Scotty McLennan, who's the Dean of Religious Life, and two other Deans of Religious Life. And the 40 people who serve in my role in the Christian communities, Buddhist communities, Hindu communities, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, those are referred to as professional leaders.
Professional leaders.
I don't like that. It sounds super culty to me, but, you know, Stanford is as Stanford is, so... That's the situation.
So
I'm the humanist chaplain of the Humanist Connection, which is the nonprofit that I run.
Wow. So can you tell us about the humanist community at Stanford and how long you've been there and what's your purpose and sort of what do you do in the professional leader capacity in which that you've been entitled?
Sure, exactly. Well, we've had our community now for about 9 months. We launched this summer and really had our first student events in September. We've had a great launch. We've had a wonderful program with more than 250 students involved with our things and, you know, great speakers, including Richard Dawkins and other fine folks like that. But we actually have changed the name of our organization from Humanist Community at Stanford to the Humanist Connection to better indicate the fact that we're not just serving Stanford students and the Stanford alumni community, but that we're actually available for all people in the Silicon Valley area who are interested in learning about humanism. The humanist, the AHA group, the Atheist Humanist Agnostics at Stanford, is one of our projects, but it's not our only concern. We're trying to build community programs throughout the Silicon Valley area.
So Stanford had an extant atheist humanist group on campus prior. You mentioned AHA. How did you integrate or ally with them? Did one group subsume the other? Did you coexist? How did this work out?
Very easily. I serve at their behest, so they are my boss in a sense. I'm there to help plan programs, bring in speakers. I'm there to talk to students if they have problems, things going wrong in their lives, or if they want to talk about planning for the future. I'm there for those conversations. But I don't run that group. They are entirely responsible for it, and they do a fantastic job of having really great events. I'm more of a facilitator and a coordinator for them, and I have no authority over the group.
So it seems like that there are multiple sort of leaders that are forming groups and having events and activities. What kinds of things goes on at the Humanist Connections or on campus with AHA Group? What kind of activities do you do?
We have lots of different activities. We've had movie nights. We've had game nights. Do you remember earlier in this, I think it was September, John Stewart debated Bill O'Reilly about future of America.
Yes.
We had a big screening of that. We had rallies that we organized with Pakistani Students Association when Malala Yousafzai, that very brave young Afghani woman, was shot in the head by the Taliban. We had a rally in White Plaza at Stanford to tell people about it. We screened a documentary. We really do just about everything. Coffee nights, dinners, barbecues, we're all over the place.
So it seems really interesting. You're not only aligning with the on-campus groups, but also, the on-campus atheist and humanist and agnostic groups, but some of the other cultural groups or possibly even religious groups. Was the Pakistani group a religious-oriented one?
Yeah, it's not religiously oriented technically, but I'm sure most of the students there are Muslim. But I explicitly reach out to religious groups as well. I think that's certainly worthwhile doing. There's a lot of common ground that we'll have with religious groups. And addressing that common ground gives you a better opportunity to talk about differences you have in the future.
How has been
getting together with the Pakistani students to do the Malala Yousafzai, that gave us credibility as people who really are willing to reach across the line and work with groups who are very different from us, but who share a common commitment to things like, I don't know, girls having education, which is just a no-brainer, right?
Novel idea,
yeah.
Right?
So you said you've been the new community has been together for about 9 months, and you've been trying to reach to other religious groups in the area. How has that been working out with other groups so far? Like, have you gotten some noise from the Christian groups? Like, we hear a lot of folks getting, or has it been pretty good so far?
My arrival at Stanford has been really nice. Stanford is a little bit like Cambridge, Massachusetts, where I just spent the last 5 years, in that it's a very secular place. It's a very liberal and friendly place. No one's picketing my office or anything. That's what you were looking to inquire about. Honestly, when I go out and I, talk with friends at a bar about what it is I'm doing, by the end of the night, there's five additional people there asking me about this new humanist community idea. so it's fascinating to see how popular this idea is in places like Silicon Valley.
Very cool.
Has there been any alumni response? Any secular humanist alumni, or you know, positive or negative in either respect? Since you are so closely, you work closely with the university.
Sure, we've had very positive relations with the alumni. In fact, I'm planning on doing several alumni weddings this September coming up. So that should be a lot of fun. But in addition to that, we have a lot of alumni who are involved with the organization on a regular basis. We're soon going to have an alum on the board of directors. And we connect alumni basically with all the opportunities of different humanist atheist groups in this area. Even partnering with groups in Harvard has a big group in San Francisco that we partner with from time to time. So we're definitely interested in reaching out not just to religious communities, but to other secular communities in the West Coast to co-host events and to have a...
Hello?
Sorry, I lost you for a second.
Oh, okay.
There.
All right, cool.
So, John, you did spend the last 5 years at Harvard in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Can you tell us a little bit about your training? I mean, your job is kind of a new job. It hasn't really existed for a long time in terms of the profession.
Sure. Well, I think a lot of people think, why would an atheist go to divinity school in the first place? what's that about? And I guess I should answer that. I went to my undergrad at Vassar in upstate New York, and Vassar is an exceptionally secular school. When I went there, it was ranked number one on the Princeton Review's list of colleges where students ignore God on a regular basis. I remember finding that abusive. But while I was at Vassar, I took a lot of philosophy courses and courses in literature and world culture, and I began to realize that religious answers are not terribly helpful in solving some of these problems. In philosophy, you don't really hear very many religious arguments advanced as serious solutions to problems. And I began to realize that religion is very influential in the world, despite not necessarily being terribly helpful in solving the basic problems that humans have.
Right.
So when I left Vassar, I ended up doing something called the AmeriCorps VISTA program, which is you work for the federal government at below the poverty level in some community in the middle of nowhere, in this case in rural Butte, Montana. And I was working at a domestic violence shelter there, and women were coming into the shelter on a regular basis. I don't know if you've ever seen a domestic violence shelter, but I think people have a misconception of what domestic violence is. This is not women coming in with like a little black eye or something. These right. women are badly, badly beaten. Some of them, their hands are burned from where their husband shoved their hand on the stove or things like that. It was really a shocker for me.
So how did this motivate you to sort of to enter your graduate studies in divinity?
Right. So while I was there and I was meeting with these women and talking with them about their problem, something I learned was that a lot of these women end up going back to their abuser. And I wanted to know why that happened. So I started asking women, what their plans were. And they would tell me that they were going to talk with their minister or with their priest about what had happened. And some of them told me that their ministers and priests told them that they had an obligation to work it out with their parents.
You're kidding.
Sorry, to work it out with their abuser. My fault. I'm sorry, I misspoke.
I wish they had misspoke.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, it's beyond ridiculous to tell someone who's being physically abused that you have a covenant before God that's more important than your problem. I found that shockingly irresponsible, and that made me realize that, religion doesn't just have some negative consequences. It has some really shockingly serious negative consequences. And inspired by that, I went off to do a graduate degree in religious studies to be a scholar of essentially anti-theism. I wanted to, be the next Christopher Hitchens type figure.
Right. I can definitely understand that. I'll admit, I make a study of Christopher Hitchens and how he does what he does. When we talk about humanist chaplaincy programs in the past, there has been a lot of interest from the community. We generally get a lot of emails whenever we talk about it, asking not only about why somebody becomes a chaplaincy or goes into the chaplaincy program. We also get a lot of questions about just how one goes about it, the more mundane aspects of it. We could call it the more mundane aspects of it, but again, this is a job. No one. This is a new type of job. So what was sort of the process of going through the program and then landing at Stanford like?
Right. Well, so I did my first year at Harvard Divinity School in their program called the MTS, the Master in Theological Studies. And that's just a purely secular degree for the advanced study of religion. And after meeting Greg Epstein, I ended up switching from the MTS to the MDiv and starting my training as a humanist chaplain. And, you know, that's an interesting story itself. You know, when I first met Greg, I was very much in the anti-theist camp. You know, I just told you the story about Montana that
right.
was motivating my study. And when I was there, I really had been pushed by this idea of doing journalism. But when I talked to Greg and when we started getting into the issues that confronted the humanist atheist movement, what kept coming up was that there were a lot of scholars of this, a lot of people writing articles and exposing the untruths of religion, but there weren't a lot of people focused on humanist community development. So I ended up structuring my MDiv specifically to focus on that. So I took a lot of philosophy courses in modern ethics and in practical ethics and approaches to ethics in the yard at Harvard instead of taking classes on how to preach or...
So that's kind of interesting because the Divinity School requirements list things like learning a language relevant to your area of religious exploration, reading the foundation
right.
books of, you know, your particular faith. How do you make that sort of requirement apply to humanism?
You know, Harvard is an exemplary institution, and the program there is phenomenal. They really work with you to make sure that you can structure a program to specifically your interests and your needs. And Dudley Rose, who is my advisor at Harvard and one of the deans of the school, was just instrumental in making sure that my experience went well. They allowed me to declare the Western philosophical canon, the whole thing, and the Eastern philosophical canon as well, as the humanist canon. And
wow.
So I was able to take classes in things like Confucian humanism from the famous Confucian scholar Du Wei Ming. I was able to take classes from, you know, John Rawls scholars, from Philippe von Paris and other famous professors and that in the yard. And to be honest, I didn't get stuck taking a lot of, churchy or religious-based classes. For the most part, my training was secular.
I feel like that's a really great representation of what humanism is the idea that you can take that humanism is something that looks at the entirety of human philosophical thought, human spiritual thought, and tries to get, you know, see what works, see what doesn't. You know, I guess from an engineering perspective, I would call it, that's a really neat hack.
Well, it's struggling with moral questions yeah. without falling back on theological mandates or, calls from on high that are, you can't argue against.
John, I'm just wondering how your classmates who may have come from a religious background sort of viewed that. Did they sort of respect your avenue of study?
I mean, I was a pretty controversial guy at Harvard because I was still fairly confrontational and fairly... new atheistic, we'll put it like that. But all the same, most students there are very liberal and very intellectually minded. So even my conservative religious colleagues, while they would disagree with me, there was no disagreeableness that came up. For the most part, people just accepted what I did and realized it as another path that people could take.
Yeah. So one thread I'm noticing here is that when you went into Harvard, you said you called yourself sort of new atheist-y. You were very anti-theistic. You wanted to study this stuff for the purposes of debunking and stuff like that. You're kind of talking like that's no longer the case. Do you see like yourself walking away from that because you're focusing more on humanism, or is this sort of a personal evolution? How did that happen? I guess.
Sure. I guess for me, it's a practical decision, which is that when you're community building, you rely on a different skill set than you rely on when you're a pure activist and you're just writing articles and trying to rabble rouse, which is awesome work, and I don't denigrate it at all.
Right.
But when you're trying to build a caring community, there's a different focus that you have, and so I've just kind of moved more in that direction. Mm-hmm. I mean, my opinions haven't changed. I still think. Essentially, religions are fairy tales. But I find that calling them fairy tales, bluntly in interfaith conversations, is not a terribly productive way to move the conversation forward. So I don't want to say that I've moderated because my opinions haven't changed. I just may be slightly more diplomatic about how I phrase my critiques these days.
But it sounds like you're doing that because your focus has changed. You're not just an activist. You see, you're trying to build communities, you know, especially with the humanist community program. So you're not. It's sort of a change in you know, task rather than a change in opinion.
Right. And I'm glad that there are people who are still doing that. I mean, you know, I'm glad to consider J.C. Eberhardt a friend. And, you know, I, as much as PZ may disagree with aspects of what I'm doing, I'm glad he's out there, you know, really pushing things on the extreme end. You know, some of what he says I'm not a super fan of, but I think that he's great in terms of expanding the conversation and widening the issues that we can talk about as a movement.
So you talked about how Harvard is a really phenomenal institution, but Harvard is, you know, geographically, financially unattainable for a lot of us who are interested in this kind of thing. What sort of suggestions do you have for that?
Well, one thing I would say is that it's not necessarily financially unattainable for anyone. Harvard has really generous financial aid options, and you know, I knew a lot of students who were getting full ride scholarships, some even getting a stipend on top of that. So it's, you know, you don't have to look at a place like Harvard as necessarily an impoverishing place. One can get in there. But to address your larger question about, you know, what happens if you don't get into Harvard, you know, if your application gets lost in the mail or something, there's no good reason why an atheist shouldn't be able to get into Harvard.
So this is another
in
question.
In that case...
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Oh, no. Harvard and Stanford are also two of the most elite educational institutions out there. The surrounding communities of Cambridge and Palo Alto are wealthy. They're highly educated. Like you said, this is a very secular community. How on earth can the humanist community extend to places like, say, Ellensburg, Washington, or Central Washington University? These are places that aren't university towns or generally not, I guess you could say, the high points of academia.
Sure. Well, I mean, I also don't want to put too much emphasis on this being only at places like Harvard and Stanford. I mean, there's a humanist chaplaincy at American University, run by a friend of mine, Ben Bieber, a great secular humanist rabbi. There's Rutgers with Barry Clasell. So, you know, there's all different kinds of communities. But when you talk about communities that don't happen to have a college, that's part of the problem. One thing right now is that humanists are very concentrated among a young age demographic that, you know, broadly under 50 range is where there are such an explosion of humanists and atheists. And you really find, so, when you have a great concentration of young people, that's a great place to start a humanist community. So as much as I would love to have humanist communities everywhere, there needs to be that critical mass of people who want to have a humanist community together, and then they can build it. And there's certainly, you know, the skills that I learned at Harvard, one can bring back and implement in any community, obviously changing them to fit the environment.
Right. So if people would like to find the humanist community of Stanford, what would be the best place for them to go?
Sure. Right now they can check us out at www.stanfordhumanist.org, or they can search for us on Facebook as the humanist community at Stanford.
All right, John Figner is a humanist chaplain at the, or I'm sorry, not the humanist chaplain. What was that? What is the name of that again?
He's
the humanist professional leader of the atheist, humanist, and agnostics at Stanford.
All right. He's also with the humanist community of Stanford, a chapter of the American Humanist Association. He previously served as the assistant humanist chaplain at Harvard, where he received his graduate degree from the Harvard Divinity School. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for talking to us about what humanist chaplaincy is and the great work you're doing down at Stanford and Palo Alto.
Thanks. It was a real pleasure. And you guys have a great show. Keep up the great work.
Thanks. Hope to talk to you again. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. We'll be back in a bit.
I am the Queen of England. You must give me your lunch money.
Why?
Because it will explode.
I don't know.
I'm the Queen of England. I know things.
Well, that makes sense. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because an authority says it doesn't make it true. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I'm melting!
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the third Thursday meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Come to the 2013 NFA Conference. The 2013 Northwest Freethought Alliance Conference will be held at Portland State University April 5th through April 7th. Principal speakers include Dr. Daryl Ray, author of Sex and God, How Religion Destroys Sexuality, Hemet Mehta of The Friendly Atheist, and Dr. Valerie Tirico, author of Trusting Doubt. Go to nwfreethought.org to register and learn more. Again, that's nwfreethought.org.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 253-584-1480. So we should talk about Peggy's Challenge. It's been the Peggy's Challenge thing, especially this season, the last 3 months, has been amazing. You guys have really stepped up and helped us out. And as a result, you know, the show will go on, and it'll be a good time. So who do we have for Becky's Challenge this week?
Peggy's Challenge this week. We've got two really special contributors we'd like to recognize. One is William from Virginia Beach, and he paid for nearly an entire episode with his contribution. So thank you so much, William. And the second is Catherine, who's local. She's from Milton in Washington, and she wrote us. She said, I wanted to just thank you for your show. I'm a new listener, and I found out about you when you did the live show at TCC, where I work. I've been using your archives to make my morning commute more interesting ever since, and wanted to rise to Peggy's Challenge. Someday I'll make it to a post show. Keep up the good work. It's great to know there are people in our community promoting reason and logic and reminding people that we can be good without God.
Yeah, so unfortunately it's not going to be this week because we are not doing a post show this week. We're a little partied out.
But stay tuned for next weekend for a nice post show.
And I really look forward to meeting somebody at TCC. It's, you know, we've been trying to work with the atheist community there, and we are working with the atheist community there.
Science and Inquiry Club. It's a great club,
and it's a fun school. And you know, we're in Tacoma, and we want to work with people in Tacoma too. So I look forward to talking to you. So we've got some interesting news out of, I guess, the UN or Egypt or
Egypt. Yes, right. An upcoming UN resolution on women's rights has Egypt's ruling Muslim Brotherhood Party railing against the idea of, wait for it, allowing women's freedom to travel without their husband's permission, to use contraception, and to control family spending.
Oh my goodness, what will they want next? Educating their girls?
The horror. In a statement on their website, the Muslim Brotherhood laments the declaration, basically saying that it would give women full rights to file legal complaints against their husbands accusing them of rape or sexual harassment, obliging competent authorities to deal with husbands' punishments similar to those prescribed for raping or sexually harassing a stranger. That's their word, competent authorities.
Wow.
They don't want to, that if you rape your wife, it should not be treated the same as raping a stranger.
And you know, heaven forbid that we should actually burden our legal authorities and our police force with investigating such things.
They also balk at the idea of giving rights to gays and lesbians as prescribed in the resolution. Egypt is proposing an amendment to the resolution that would give countries immunity to portions of the amendment that contradict, quote, national laws, religious or cultural values. Egypt has joined Russia and the Vatican.
Wait, repeat that again, Mike.
Worst Voltron ever.
Oh, yeah. And that, again, Egypt has joined Russia and the Vatican in an attempt to derail the resolution entirely in what some diplomats have called an unholy alliance.
Wow.
Well, all right, let's look at what the amendment does. And what the amendment does is completely invalidate the whole concept of the law, right?
I mean, it acknowledges that women are human beings and should not be, like, beaten up and raped and be allowed to spend their own money.
I'm going to amend it so that if my religion says that that's okay, then I don't have to abide by this, you know.
Now, imagine if we applied that to any other law. You're not allowed to murder people unless you don't wanna.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to steal things unless you got a rule in your little rule book that says it's okay to steal on Thursdays. It's... Wow.
This is not limited to just Islam or Egypt either. This happens everywhere.
No, this is everywhere. All the religious, the marriage equality laws. Why do they fight the marriage equality laws? Because of, they want to have exceptions for their religious privilege. And here's just another another situation.
I've seen some instances where there was an education bill, I forget which state it was in, that basically said that if I give a religious answer to a science question on a quiz, it should not be marked as incorrect. So if I'm a lazy student, and I was when I was in high school, and I knew I hadn't studied for a science test, I'm just going to make Jesus the answer to every question, whether I believe or not, and I didn't.
So luckily, that kind of bill hasn't passed my knowledge in terms of, being able to justify your biology test answers with religion. But here's one actually at home in the United States that's, kind of getting, given secular activists a run for its money. And this is basically the Arizona state legislature, some Arizona legislators that are wanting to pass this religious immunity bill that's basically like the same amendment on this women's rights kind of thing.
So what is it?
Well, basically, it's a strike-all amendment to Arizona State Bill 1178, and it says that no government entity can burden religious freedom. It essentially gives anyone carte blanche to justify any horrid action with religion, just as long as, the government doesn't have a compelling interest in it. So if the Arizona government decides that they don't have a compelling interest in preventing harassment of gay people, then they cannot burden people's religious freedom by saying, hey, don't use your religion to harass gay people.
So if I'm, harassing my gay neighbor and, I don't know, throwing leaflets about Jesus all over his yard and his car, and I'm constantly harassing him, and I'm getting his neighbors to harass him, and I did it because Jesus... then that's okay.
It's
if I beat somebody up or shoot an abortion doctor, there's really no top
tier. There's no end to this, and it doesn't just have to be the standard religions. I could invent a religion that says it is a sacrament for me to throw rocks at the cars of politicians. I could do that right now. It's completely legal in the United States. It's not legal for me to throw rocks at the cars of politicians. It's actually not really legal for me to throw rocks at any car I don't own. But in this case of this law, if I were go down to Arizona and I were to, take enormous rocks and throw them at Jan Brewer's car, and they arrested me, I go, oh, no, religious sacrament, let me do it. It's cool.
Yeah, and if Arizona decided that it was in the, compelling interest of the state to burden your religion, then they would. And if they considered that it was not in their interest to burden your religion, then they say, hey, your religious freedom
so
stands.
So that goes, again, to an establishment clause things, because now the state government has to make a choice as to whether or not this is a valid religious thing or an invalid religious thing, and now we've got governments making decisions about religions. Mm-hmm. This is establishment. This is religious establishment right
and
here.
And these are the same people who passed this law in the first place, and they're going to be the ones to decide whether it's good or not. The fact that they passed this law at all, it says that they have a really high bar for determining if they're going to get in the way.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair, this is actually a bill right now. It is not law. It's a strike-all amendment to 1178. But one of the ridiculous things is that this actually comes as an expansion from
that other bill that a lot of people have been talking about.
A lot
about.
Of people have been talking about this when opponents have dubbed it the toilet papers bill, which basically says that you can be held criminally liable for using the public restroom designated for people that is not your biological sex.
Yeah.
And basically, this is to prevent transgender people from using public restrooms. You know, we have the Center for Arizona Policy, which is an evangelical Christian lobby group that's basically saying, hey, oh no, this is in reaction to the Phoenix City Council's non-discrimination ordinance. And they said, hey, if we let transgender people who identify as women use the women's bathroom even though they're biologically male, this will actually allow predatory men to follow little girls into public restrooms. Totally forgetting the fact that Flagstaff and Tucson have had this non-discrimination ordinance forever and ever. Well, I mean, for several years, with no increase in little girls being accosted by predatory men restrooms. I mean, it's ridiculous.
This is just what you do. Every time we try to, you know, people try to pass laws about equality in this country, every time we try to pass laws that says that, you know, gay people and transgendered people are human beings, the first place religious people go after, oh no, my religious privilege, is children. This idea of predatory men going into girls' bathrooms, this is an invention.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's no instance of this anywhere.
If this, here's the other thing: is this actually going to stop anything?
No, that's not what it's intended to do. Though.
He's already breaking. If you're being predatory on girls, you're already breaking the law. There are other laws that we can use in these scenarios.
These people don't care about that. What they see is a possibility to create precedent to attack gay rights.
Right.
To attack transgendered people. Yeah. That's what they're interested in. They're not interested in anything else. They're not interested in protecting children. That's a farce. It's a red herring.
The scary man in the bathroom is a straw man. It's a complete straw man.
Yeah, and if you take away somebody's religious right to be able to, you know, say, hey, I don't think that transgender people should be able to use public bathrooms, then you're burdening my religious freedom. And it's so disappointing to hear.
They have every right to say it. This is the difference between actually being persecuted and whining about being persecuted, is it a question of whether you're allowed to say something? Yes, you are allowed to say it as long as the day is long. You're not allowed to enforce that on other people. Again, religious people, if you want to limit behavior, you're free to do it to yourself all you want. If you want to not eat meat on Fridays, if you want to not eat pork, not drink alcohol, not have sex with people of the same gender, you're free to do that for yourself all you want. But you can't make that decision for other people, especially with a law behind it.
And what do you do about all the restaurants in Arizona that only have one bathroom?
I think it's labeled as such that it's a single stall and it's designated for both men and women, and that one's okay. But if you have something that just has a, you know, the little skirt wearing figure, then only biological females are allowed to use that. So we've got an email from Patricia from the internet.
Okay.
And she says, I'm a closet atheist, and one of my work colleagues had to decide whether to prolong life support for a family member with no brain activity. I tried to help her with her workload so she didn't feel overwhelmed, and when I asked if there was anything else she needed, she responded, yes, I need your prayers. Can you pray for a miracle so he wakes up? So Patricia's question for us is, she feels really guilty for saying, yes, I'll pray for him. How do we handle this?
I would do what Patricia did. Okay. And I just leave it go. In a situation like this, I have problems with it? Yeah. Would I feel bad about it? Absolutely. But this is a person in an incredibly dark place. It's, for me, sometimes it's just not about the fight.
One thing I would do, honestly, I wouldn't say yes, but I wouldn't get into a fight. Okay. I think what I would say is just ignore the question and ask if there's something I can do. Is there something I can do? Do you need food? Anything? I just say, is there something I can do to help?
Right.
And
but what if this is the answer? Because that's happened to me. Is there anything I can do to help you? Do you need me to go get you some food? Do you need me to take you anywhere? You know, do you need somebody to be at the hospital at a certain time? And they said, well, you can pray for me.
The answer to that question is, it depends if they know if I'm an atheist or not.
Yeah.
If they know that I'm an atheist, I say, well, I'm not religious, but can I help you in any other way?
Okay.
I think that's what I'd say, if they knew.
I think sometimes you have, you have community congregations that have prayer lists and things like that. And so if you really wanted to be true to yourself by not lying and saying, I will pray for your loved one, but also sort of make that person feel better, you could say, you know, I will be sure to include your loved one's name on my church's prayer list.
Mm-hmm.
So that, therefore, that person can feel that other people are praying, but you don't have to have that. And you can kind of keep that division in
your
head.
That goes a little farther than I'd go. I guess what I'm saying is, when somebody is in an incredibly dark place, I'm comfortable with lying to make them comfortable.
I tend to be of the same mind, Sam.
And that's really all I'm saying. When it does happen to me, I usually just go along with it at the time, and then at some point later, when they're in a better place, when they can have that conversation, then it comes out. You ask me to pray for your loved one. This is not something that I do, and you know how I feel about this. I really care about, you know, again, I'm quoting a conversation I've already had. I really care about this person. I really, you know, I want them to live. I want them to pull out of this. But it's not in my religion. It's not something that I believe in.
Yeah, I don't have to use the A word. I just say, I'm not religious, but can I help out in some other way?
Right,
and
right.
And I think that Patricia did take that tack with, can I help you with your workload? Can I provide any food? Do you need any babysitting? And that's something that atheists and humanists are generally quite good at in terms of sort of strife and hardship when you have something really difficult facing you.
Yeah, and honestly, I would really like to hear somebody yell at me for being willing to lie to people. So if you go to askanatheist.tv and click on the shiny candy red button, you can leave us an email and let me know what you think about my lying ways. We do have one final set of announcements. Shelley Siegel will be at the Tri-City Freethinkers in the Pacific Northwest in April. She'll be at the Zinful Panini Grill and Wine Bar in Kennewick on Saturday, April 13th, starting at about 6 p.m. You can find more information at tricityfreethinkers.org. Also, stay tuned. Shelley Siegel will be playing at an Ask an Atheist post show before too long. Looks like it's going to be the next day, April 14th. Watch the website and this show for details.
Yes, indeed. So I think that's all the time that we have today. You can always follow up with us at askanatheist.tv. We're on 3 p.m. And let's see, it's been really great with having Sam and Mike on today. Just one more reminder that you can go to campquestnorthwest.org if you are interested in becoming a counselor. Join us there. You'll hear and talk to all kinds of people from Ask an Atheist.
Absolutely. Camp Quest Northwest camp counseling is really fun. Again, that's campquestnorthwest.org. That's all the time we have for today. My name is Sam. With me is Becky and Mike. How you doing? Nick Kennedy was my production assistant. Ask an Atheist is an NEDM Media production. You can give us a voicemail at 206-420-0997. Again, our website is askanatheist.tv, and we'll see you guys next week.